हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 87. Whenever an Acharya comes, following the superior orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or his representative, he establishes the principles of religion, as enunciated in Bhagavad Gita. Right? So here's that religion means it has the philosophy is there, there's the practical application that is there. Right? So that will include how in application there's a culture. Right? Because when you apply something, then there's a way to do it.
Yes.
Does that make sense? You know, it's like if we say, take the spoon and stir the potatoes in the pan, there's a way to do it. You know? Does that make sense? So how you hold, just like let's say if we're holding a spoon, we hold it one way. If we're holding a spatula, another way. If we're holding, let's say, a whisk, a different than that. Or if we're holding, let's say, something like a pestle for mortar, we'll hold it differently. But they're all long things. But each one, we're holding them differently. That's the culture.
Yes.
Right? So the religion is that that thing has its nature. And it has its nature of what it does. In other words, it has a form and it has an activity that will generate a particular result. That is the religion. Right? Mm-hmm. That's a very important thing to understand. If that's understood, things go really, really easy in Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
Now, there's a philosophy that explains it, and then there's an art to apply it. Right? So they all go together. Does that make sense? So it's a mistake to think that there's not already a form and activity for these things. Right? At the same time is, in the spiritual world, then you're being practical with perfection. In the material world, you're being practical with whatever you can get your hands on. Does that make sense? Like that. So you bring it as close to what standard as possible. That's what we're trying to do. Does this make some sense? So when the Acharya comes to establish religion, it means all of that. He doesn't just come to give some philosophy. He comes to give the whole lifestyle that goes along with it.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? So much of the time this lifestyle is overlooked, either because we come from a background that doesn't really have a specific lifestyle,
yes,
or we are attached to that unspecific lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? We're specifically attached to the unspecific lifestyles.
Yes.
Yes. Does that make sense? That then becomes the difficulty. Then we don't see that, oh no, he probably just gave some philosophy.
Yes.
You know, and the basic thing, you know, you chant your rounds, you follow the regular principles, and then that's it. But he gives the whole package. How much of it we're able to appreciate, how much of it we're able to apply. That's another thing. As we become purified, it becomes easier and easier. It makes more and more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's why then there's the need of a society.
Yes.
Right? Because in the other ages, you don't require societies. One is the Vedic society is already going on. So then it's already all the principles of devotional service, basically not necessarily with the devotion.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Means, following the Varnashram system, a devotee could go and spend time with the demigods and have no problem, because the culture would be the same. Or he could go spend time with the demons. The culture would be the same. Now, the outlook on life, on whether Vishnu is important or not, now that's going to be what's different. Right? But otherwise, it's going to be the same. Because there's one culture. Does that make sense? There'll be nuances and differences and all that. Like we see that when Maya Danova is going to build the hall for the court for Maharaj Yudhishthir in Indraprastha, then Krishna said, use the architecture of the demigods, of the demons, and of the humans. Right? All mixed together. So that's something very unique, because you get human architecture here, you get demoniac architecture, the demons architecture in the lower planets, and you get the heavenly stuff on the higher planets. But this was a mix of all three of them, so something that's never been seen in the universe, right? Because he wanted to make something unique for his devotee. Right? So that's the there is flavor difference, but the principle is the same. The gate's going to be in the same place. Right, you're still it's going to be a certain size so you can get through it. Now the ornamentation, now that's going to give the flavors. Right, that's going to be the difference. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that gives uniqueness. So here, then establishing that, you have a society, and that then establishes how things will work, because since you're trying to do something on a very grand scale, and to maintain grandeur, you need management, you need administration, you need structure, right? So that there's a standard by which everything gets done. Does this make sense? Right? Otherwise, then different people interpret different ways, and it'll go all over the place, especially when you're having a international society that's not, they're not all coming from the same common background. So now the choice is there, is do you choose something that's beyond? In other words, it's working with the best quality of the modes that's compatible with working beyond the modes as the universal principle. In other words, what's beyond the modes is actually universal.
Yes.
Once you drop down into the modes, that's when now it starts to become, regional, or, you know, it belongs to a certain group of persons, a certain individuals appreciate and all that. Mm-hmm. Right? So then, but you use a system that is the best support for this actual universal system. So that's the Vedic system being applied in Daiva Varnashra. Right? So it's the mode of goodness being applied to serving the Lord. Does that make sense? So that's the best use of a bad bargain. The other option is to do the melting pot principle, which means you strip away any fineness that makes a difference between one culture and another, and you bring it down to the lowest common denominator that everybody can relate to. You understand? So, what can they relate to in eating, sleeping, and mating and defending? And you bring it down to that level, and then you try to make that the international standard. You understand?
Yes.
Now, the difference being is the bottom one is based on ignorance and attachment. The top one is based on naishkarmya and service to the Lord.
Yes.
That's the difference between the two. Does that make sense? So the Acharya sets something that will work on the international level, that will work for everybody. And it does. Due to attachment, of course, we can't adjust with so many things. But the point is, we have to remember, we are addressing the soul. We have to address the attachment, but only as much as needs to function. The primary has to be on the soul. So if we make the conditioning the primary, then the system can never get beyond low-level neophyte. Because we have to remember, if you're jealous, then that's the lowest level of the neophyte. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so therefore then the Acharya then establishes a social system that can accommodate that lowest common denominator, but it's bringing you step by step to that highest position. Right? That means to do that you have to be empowered. That's the uniqueness. Because we see that this principle has only been functioning since Bhaktivinod Thakur. Right? Having to do like that. Because before that, everybody was following the Vedic culture. Right? So then you didn't have to worry about it. Only with, or it would be, at minimum, Vedic culture mixed with some Asian elements. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So that's basically the same.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like that. Somebody from Asia, anywhere, if they follow the, you know, what would be considered cultured or high class in their region, and they met with anybody else from Asia and who was following also what was considered high class in their region, they would get along fine. Minor uniquenesses, but it would be, the principle would be the same. You know, does that make sense? So up to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that was the principle. Either straight Vedic or Vedic with a touch of other Asian influences. Right? But with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's addressing the addition into the equation of the Mlecha culture. Right? That's what he's addressing. And we can see is from his discussions and this and that, how he presented, he's already done all this. He's set the foundation how to work within this. Right? Then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did use the same thing, but from as the machinery, it was brahmacharis and sannyasis. Mm-hmm. It would accommodate grihasthas because he had 64 temples, right? Mm-hmm. And how many, have any of you seen the temples? Any of the temples?
Yes.
Right? They're not that big, mm-hmm. right? So what could you have? 150, 60, 100 brahmacharis there? Even you say 200. Like that. You know, we'd say, okay, that's good. 64 temples, how many thousands is that? He had 60,000 disciples. So what does that mean? That means the bulk was community. Mm-hmm. Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur preached to community. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a driving preaching machine with community. And then Prabhupada showed how to blend that very nicely. Right, so he established temples instead of mutts. Right, we had two mutts when Prabhupada was here, like that. They're not mutts anymore, but they were. So it's not that we didn't have mutts; it's just that they weren't prominent. Yes.
What's the difference between a mutt and a temple?
Mutt means it's just brahmacharis and sannyasis, no grihasthas. Doesn't mean that grihasthas don't come and do service, but they can't live there. And then you have a temple which grihasthas may live. Like in India, like the Madhwas, they have mutts. There's no grihasthas living in the temple, but the manager of the mutt will be a grihastha. They'll deal with all the accounts, administration, and all that kind of thing. But they don't live there. So they don't live on temple facility like that. Well, the temple, then you see Tirupati, Sri Rangam, all that, that's grihasthas. Jagannath Puri, it's grihasthas. Like that. There may be a brahmachari here and there, but it's not. It works for everybody. Does that make sense? That's the difference. So what they're doing is exactly the same. It's just a matter of what's the environment there. Does that make sense? So yeah. So then Prabhupada made this. So then that makes that so anybody can be involved. Because before it was the community was nicely situated, that wherever you needed to situate yourself, you could. Mm-hmm. But with the Western environment where how things should actually work culturally is not necessarily working, then the option is there that temples are there. And they're a tradition. Sometimes people say, oh, Prabhupada changed things. Prabhupada didn't change anything. None of the acharyas changed anything. It's a misnomer. No one bona fide changes anything. They may give a unique presentation of it that hasn't had to be applied before. But they don't change it. Jiva Goswami didn't change the philosophy when he says Radha and Krishna are eternally married according to Tattva. Yeah. But he's not saying they're married in rasa. Just that we don't focus on the Tattva part because we bring that out. That's philosophy. And we focus on the rasa. So that's the relationship. Right? But he had to focus on that part just because his disciples were a bit too moralistic. To attach to moralism. So he brings that out. He doesn't change anything. Like that. So it's a misnomer to think that there's any contradiction between any of the acharyas. That's one of the qualities of Narad Muni, is he can reconcile all contradictions, all in any seeming contradictions. Because in the Veda, there are no contradictions. We only think there are. Does that make sense? like that. So then the acharyas, then out of the Vedic system, then the pancharatra is there. That narrows it down to just what rituals and everything is connected to the Lord and what's favorable to that. Does that make sense? That's the main thing. But at the same time, since you're working on a larger cultural scale, the varnashram is necessary. Right? Because pancharatra is about you and the deity. It doesn't deal with anything else.
Yes.
You're getting up in the morning, you're taking your bath, you're brushing your teeth, you're going to the toilet, you're getting dressed, you're chanting your Gayatri, you're going to Mangalarti. You know, you're worshipping the deity, taking Charinamrita, taking Darshan, taking Prasad. Like that, doing a particular service for the deities, right? That's pancharatra. But it's perfectly compatible with the Vedic system because now that person who's doing all that, he has a family. How does he interact with the family? Pancharatra doesn't explain that. It's not meant to explain that. It's already explained in the Vedas. So therefore, then how much of the Vedic you require to therefore run a social system that you can hold together a community of such individuals following the pancharatra in pursuance of the Bhagavat goals.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does this make sense? So it's very clear. Therefore, the Veda literature is there. Now, if you want to match something with pancharatra, because you're talking about the cleanliness, you're talking about the timeliness, you're talking about all these different things, and that has to match it with the Bhagavat. Therefore, the Vedic is the perfect match.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's why then that light has to be brought out. That's why there must be a structure so that you can bring all these together in a proportion that works in the environment that one's in. Right? And one has to understand is that this modern, what we call modern, it's always been there. It's just always been in the minority. It's always been there. This idea is that it's new, it's fresh, it's this. No, it's old and stale like everything else in the material world. It's been around since time immemorial. Like that. There's always been Charvak. He's your original, you could say, Westerner, right? Just eat, sleep, and be merry, for tomorrow you're dead. You know? That's his philosophy. Beg, borrow, or steal to get ghee. His whole idea is that since life is temporary, when this life is over, you're finished. Therefore, engage your senses to the max. And since the best sense gratification is going to be eating something good, and something good is cooked in ghee, therefore get ghee. Right? You know, he knew his priorities, right? You can eat all day, right? How long can you have sex for? Think about it. In reality. Therefore, he, as a materialist, he was focused. He knew what he was doing. Right? Anywhere and everywhere, you can get something to eat. Right? I'm not sure if it was him or... can't remember who was the personality. They also were showing something in a similar line that was different. They were kind of making a funny point that... you know, you always get food to eat, but now and again you get something really excellent. Right? It's not all the time. And so the person said, when you get something excellent, eat as much as you can of that. Right? And then if someone says, no, but if you eat like that, you'll kill yourself. Then his retort is, yes, another birth is easy to get. That you'll get anyway, just like another meal. But to get a good meal, that's rare. So therefore, prefer the good meal, even if it kills you. You know. Yeah, so these philosophies have been around for a lot long, thousands and thousands of years. They've been around. But, you know, but modern man always likes to think he's new and fresh, like that. Okay, so the acharya comes, he establishes these principles of religion so that all this nice combination could go on perfectly. So when Prabhupada said this mission will go on for 10,000 years, he gave a system that will work for 10,000 years. And seeing that it's the golden age, that means that people will become more and more pious, more and more able to be adjusted with Krishna consciousness. So therefore, you want to establish a system that can accommodate actually pious people.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? You can't use a system that only deals with low-class, uncultured, impious people. And here when we say low class uncultured, it means not following lifestyle in the mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. Right? We're not meaning they're not sophisticated. Mm-hmm. We're not meaning that they're not refined. We're not meaning that they're not sensitive. Because pranamoya, that means you can come to a very refined level. You know, just like a deer. You know, they're quite refined. But they're still an animal. So we're not saying that. We're saying that human life begins with varnashram. That's not a point of discussion. That's just a fact. Just like if you breathe air, then you won't die. Or water's wet. You know, birds fly. You know, okay, except for kiwis. Okay?
Mm-hmm. And ostriches.
Okay.
And penguins.
There's three. Okay, so we got three. Do we have a fourth? Going once.
Do-do.
Going twice. Huh?
Dodo.
Huh? Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that's the point. You don't fly, you end up dead. Well, I mean, if you want to get into that, then the moas also. They're all the same thing. They're all just varieties of ostriches. It means ostriches are small, dodos are bigger, and the moas made dodos look small. You ever heard of moas?
No.
Yeah. They were monsters, like an ostrich that would be, you know, up to that brickwork. Huge birds like that. And then the people who ate them were called the moas. The moa moas or moa hutas. Right? The people who lived in Australia, the aboriginals. Then the Phoenicians came along in their boats, and then they ate the moa hutas, along with the moas. So now there's no more moas, there's no more moa hutas. Like that, they ate them all, right? So now they're known by the name Maori. Yeah. So they're not actually the original people. But they've been there so long, they're as good as the original people.
They are the ones who ate dodo too?
They are the ones that ate the other team. Yeah. Because it's in the tradition, if you have a war and you beat the other team because they were so valorous, you eat them. You know, because you take on their good qualities and all. Yeah. You like that. You know, just, whatever. It works for them.
That's totally thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like that. So, aside from this little, yes.
Right, so although Srila Prabhupada gave the whole package to the society, somehow after so many years we still struggle.
Yes.
So is it misunderstanding of philosophy or lack of practice?
It would be a mix of a bit. We would have the aspect of the basic philosophy is understood, but technical details that apply to practice when it comes to how you apply it into your personal life and into your personal relationships, into your economics, that's not understood. Why won't that be understood? Because for many, there's no samskar, no experience of such a thing. Mm-hmm. So they just it's like talking about something no one's ever heard of. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, talking about, yeah, the dragons and this and that, and somebody, it's like, who's ever heard of them? So it's all, to them, it's all myth. And then that's compounded by the reason they haven't heard about is because the particular modes that the souls are in at the time. So because of being in a particular combination of passion and ignorance, therefore they're born into situations where there is no samskar of a lifestyle actually in the mode of goodness. So the Veda is talking about a lifestyle in goodness. Krishna the Gita is talking about goodness. Right? It's always recommended that you live a lifestyle in goodness. Goodness means you're living what is recommended in the Vedas without attachment. Mm-hmm. Right? It's supposed to be done. That's where human life starts. This is what I'm supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But when you take about, I'm born in this place, therefore it's my attachment to act in this way, that's passion and ignorance. Passion because I want to act in my way. Ignorance because I think I'm actually from that place. You know, it's one thing to consider. The body has this kind of thing, but the body really doesn't care. Body, it's like this. Let us say you're from North Finland. Okay? So, therefore, if there's no snow on the ground, it's warm for you. Right? So you don't have to wear much clothes. You can wear a summer outfit and it's 5 degrees out.
Yes.
But what you're wearing, does the body care? No. So that's the thing. It's just, you have to see, I have to eat a particular kind of food, meaning I have to eat either something with more oil in it, less oil in it, you know, things that are more towards vata, more towards pitta, more towards kapha. But what that combination is, that's not what's important. You understand?
Yeah.
Because you can adjust to anything.
Mm-hmm.
People adjust all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like in Brazil, is pizza the local food? No, but it's the national food. The most restaurants and the most things people go out to eat is pizza. Even though their local thing is, you know, rice and potatoes and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. Vegetable. They basically eat rice with sabji and beans. You know, basically their sabji has lots of beans in it. You know? Does that make sense? But it adjusts. You know, how is it they're doing that? It's not their thing. But they're adjusting to wheat. You know what I'm saying? So it works as long as it gets into the particular proportion that you require. So this thing is, no, I have to dress and eat like this. That's just attachment. Pure attachment. It may be psychologically, it makes you feel better and you're comfortable, so then you do nicely. Great. But then you have to know that that's just what it is. It's just comfort food for you. And comfort food, we always know, is based on attachment. It's an emotional thing. Right? You get emotionally disturbed, so you eat foods that you really like. You know, or put yourself in situations you're really comfortable in. So it's just known that it's something that you do when things aren't the way you like it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also understood it's not necessary.
Yes.
Right? You'll live without comfort food. It just makes it okay. So it's accommodated. Right? So even the greater society accommodates that. But now one has to be very careful. Now what will a child do? A child will base their whole lifestyle on what's comfortable for them.
Yes.
Due to lack of maturity. They can't adjust for anything else. They don't want to change their dress for when they go out, or they like what they're wearing. They don't want to adjust it because they're going out somewhere, or, you know, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That's a child. You know, they're in a place where only this is available. No, they demand that.
Yes.
That's a child. So therefore, the acharyas create a society and give a lifestyle that's meant for adults. Because adults start with human life. If you don't have human life, you don't have adults. So then they give that, and so then it works. So it has to be able to accommodate that. But the Vedic system is so perfect that... Now, would we say on a general scale that Indians do well with children?
Yes.
Okay. So that means the Vedic system accommodates kids really well. So therefore, even though someone has a childish mentality, they can still fit within the Vedic system very nicely. But they have to fit into the system under those who are more mature. They have to be guided by those who are adult. That's all. So the system is very perfect like that. So now, because of this lack of samskar and lack of and the modes, therefore it's not seen what's there. They can't see that what it is and all that. That's why there's struggle. So when Prabhupada says that you have philosophy without religion, there'll be mental speculation. So when it comes to culture and these things, that's exactly what's there. So what would that mean? It means there is no religion. People are just functioning by default on whatever their own concept of religion is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense? That's why we use the term Protestant. We're not saying that everybody's a Protestant. We're saying we're using that formula, because Protestant means it's just between you and the Lord. It doesn't matter. No one can tell you. There is no authority. There is no examples. There is no authority. It's just you and God.
But then in our case, we have the whole parampara, means so many people in
between. Yes, yes. So we can therefore see what is there and how they live and what they did and catch that mood. So even if the form of it we can't get, we can catch the mood. And the mood is accommodating. Like that. But that doesn't mean that you accommodate and allow the children to get out of hand. It's not governed by the children. Just like, let's say, you go to a formal dinner. Children are at formal dinners, but they're behaving in a way that matches a formal dinner. Right? While you see in some scenarios, people are out with their children in restaurants and this and that. The kids are yelling and screaming, making a noise, and the parents are not controlling them. And others are getting upset, and it's kind of like, they're kids, what's your problem? Rather than, we're adults, we're supposed to control them. You understand? And then we make a philosophy that that's okay, that's the way it's supposed to be. All this other stuff you can't do anymore. Simple. Why? Because those individuals have no idea what training kids is. They themselves are children. Right? They're just too old to run around and climb under the tables and throw things at each other. You know, that's all. Otherwise, they'd be doing it. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's just a matter of time as the movement continues that devotees are getting more and more purified. That naturally, then the natural thing is the whole social system will also take on better and better qualities. But it just will take time. So individuals may move quicker, some individuals slower, but in overall, it will move forward. Is that something? But it's just a matter of when. So if people accept the system and try to apply it, then it'll work better. Because you can't do manana, or contemplation and practice, unless in shravana you've accepted it. Yeah. If on the platform of shravana you doubt and don't want to take it beyond to that, you'll never get to practice. So most of the reason devotees don't practice the cultural things that Prabhupada talks about, because they don't understand it or accept it. Or they just don't even see it. They just, you know, they just read because of their samskaras, they catch philosophy, so they catch Krishna consciousness. But they don't catch the subtleties of how culture works. But with time, that purification will be there, they'll start to catch it. So when they catch it, if there's adults there to then guide them, then it'll go through nicely. But if not, if you have some big kids that tell them, no, you don't have to do all this, just being a kid is all that, you know. Yes. Then it's a disaster. Then what you're going to end up with is Lord of the Flies. You know, like that. And because adults won't acknowledge, they will say we're bigger than that, then throw in a touch of 1984. And then bingo. Does that make sense? So it is possible if one accepts it. If one accepts it, one can contemplate it. If one can contemplate it, one can practice it. And so if one has proper association, then that contemplation and practice then will start to give fruit. One will start to move forward. One will see how it works. Beginning may be slow, but it will develop. And the beauty of Krishna consciousness, even if you don't perfect it, it doesn't matter, because Krishna consciousness is not based on material perfection. Just at once trying to do things to please Krishna, that's what Krishna is going to see. So even if one's not good at it, it's still going to work. The point is that it has to be for Krishna. So it's either, here it's recommended, we see it in the purports, we see it in the literatures, this is what it do, so we try to follow that to please Krishna. Or Prabhupada just gave us this in the beginning, I only am going to do that because this is what Prabhupada said. That'll also work because it's connected to Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. Like that. But this thing is, no, I'm not going to do either of those. I'm a Western, I'm going to do whatever I like. That in no way, shape, or form is progressive. It's only regressive. Because it's based on the mode of ignorance. It's destructive. Because one's envious of the actual system. So it places one on, it, as a devotee, but as a neophyte, on the lowest level. Right? Either on the you know, mixed with ignorance or mixed with passion or a combination. So it's not progressive. Does that make sense? So the first thing is accepting it, then slowly, 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 one can apply it. Like that. So that's the thing to focus on, is whether one accepts it. If one accepts it, then one can practice it. But if one doesn't accept it, one will never practice it. And to accept it, one has to be aware of it. So that's association. Does that work? Does that answer?
Yes. I'm just thinking that in the West, we don't see a practical example of Vedic culture at all.
No.
And then it's very difficult to implement that.
Yes, it is. But if it's appreciated, then you can apply it. Just like when Prabhupada was here, then devotees just naturally did all these things. You know, but the whole discussion actually is this point. Because now the acharya will leave. And then what will happen? That's actually what this purport's about.
Yes.
So when Prabhupada's here, then, you know, you have a few doubting Thomases. You always have them.
Yes.
Like that. You always have them. Like that. But you can't take doubting Thomases. See, doubting Thomas means the synapses are working. There is some intelligence there. But it's not necessarily being properly addressed because there's lack of purity. So now if you get a whole bunch of doubting Thomases together, and because they're smart, then they work out their own philosophy. And that they're great and they're the standard, then basically heaven help us. Right? That's the difficulty. That's the problem, is that when you take this pranamoy to extreme and all these different things to extreme, then it's what anybody says is truth is truth. You know what I'm saying? That's the meaning of okay, so then we agree to disagree. And generally, what one person says, that the other person doesn't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea is that then I'm saying is that okay, but it doesn't matter. There's no absolute reality. This is reality for me. That's reality for you. And just we won't bother each other. So what does that mean? It means there is no absolute reality. So it's actually atheism. Right? There is a principle, is that everybody agrees that you're functioning on a particular level, and that's fine for your level, so you don't bother them. Like a child, they act in a certain way, nobody bothers them. And a child cries, who gets upset? Right? Because that's just children. But if they're bigger and they cry, then that's not going to be good. Does that make sense? So you can accommodate, but there is a standard. But according to your position, you're at this position in comparison to the standard. But to say that there is no standard and it's whatever I feel and whatever you feel and whatever anybody else feels is the standard, that's just straight up front atheism. Because then we're saying that there is no laws of God, you know, or there's laws of nature, but they're not laws of God. And they don't govern our life. They only govern, we just manipulate them to get benefit from it. But it's not that there's a lifestyle that goes along with it. So we only see, I see that there's laws, but only how much is for my sense gratification. But sense gratification is the law. So I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. That's the law. And so if we use that as the premise, as a social system, how will that be compatible with devotional service? So that's the problem. We can't contemplate the culture, but at the same time we're unable to contemplate actually the philosophy. Certain aspects of the philosophy, yes. But when it gets down into practical application, that's where then we fail. Does that make sense? So the devotees, therefore accepting it, then they try to their best, and then Krishna reveals, and then things work nicely. Because that's the thing, is devotees who are sincerely trying, then there's always a wonderful result.
Mm-hmm.
Like, see, devotees before, they didn't know how to do anything. They were all hippies. Not all hippies, most hippies. But then they go out and do something, amazing. That even, you know, if you hired big managers that you were playing, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, you wouldn't necessarily get that a result. Why? Because they just sincerely wanted to please Krishna, and Krishna reciprocated. So they do amazing stuff. Because for Krishna, it's that sincere endeavor. But it has to be sincere. You can't say, it's only about the primary, not the secondary, therefore I'll do whatever I want with the secondary. That's not sincere. Sincere is, I want to connect the secondary to Krishna, because the results are for Krishna. Secondary generates the results. The results are for Krishna, therefore the secondary matters. But it matters because it gets the results for the primary. And so therefore, I will do what I can relate to in the best way possible to do it for Krishna. That it has to be about Krishna, not about ourselves. We consider within ourselves, I'm comfortable doing this or I'm comfortable doing that. That's how we situate. That's what Varnashram is for. How to situate yourself doing something for Krishna that accommodates your conditioning. But to take the conditioning as the primary and then claim that it's all about the actual primary, that's bogus. Does that make sense? So due to taking on the political liberal perspective instead of the actual philosophical liberal perspective, you know, or broad-mindedness, then it doesn't actually improve anything. You just simply move your narrow-mindedness. And that gives rise to all kinds of things that shouldn't be there. Because liberalness means there can't be standards. We set the standards today according to what we feel. Right? That's liberal. Right? So they're just as narrow-minded as the conservative. Because they set the standard. This conservative works on traditional things, and then they only can see that. The liberal can only see that there is no tradition, no standards. We just what we as a group feel is right is right. Like that. And it's only because everybody's saying that. If everybody in the room didn't say that, you would feel uncomfortable. But if you say it to your friend and they agree, and then with time then there's something else and it kind of slowly grows, it becomes a movement, then you feel good. But as soon as that adjusts and changes, then there's a problem. You know, so that's the thing, is these things change in a moment. That's the modes of nature. Yeah, so we have to be very, very careful. Does that work? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
So Maharaj, the only way to deal with the situation is to be always learning how to apply the Vedic teaching.
Yes. Yes.
We need to be always under the protection of, spiritual master guidance.
Yes, 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 yes. Under spiritual authority.
Yes, and the spiritual authority must understand this principle. Well.
Yes, to the best of their ability.
Yes, yes.
The point is if one's sincere, that means you're doing your best. Even if it's not very good, it's your best.
Yes, yes.
Like the child is trying to do something sincerely. But, you know, they're sincerely trying to write their alphabet. They don't do a very good job.
Yes.
But it's sincere, therefore they learn.
Yes.
Like that. That's the whole thing. That makes it work. Is that okay?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. You had some... You?
Yeah, I was thinking about the border, the limits in being attached and actually trying to be practical in your life. So I was... You correct me if I'm wrong. It would be like you can just change. If you change a place, you're going to adjust to that place without being disturbed, right? So that would be like the difference.
Yes. Basically, it's a matter of, am I attached to a certain way of doing things, or am I attached to the principle of how to get something done? You know what I'm saying? You can't have a philosophy where it's all about the primary, but you're attached to the secondary. That is totally unintelligent, illogical. You understand? The whole point is the Vedic, it's about the primary. The secondary is what's going to manifest it. That's the importance of it. So now you may be comfortable with a certain secondary, but the point of it's still its only importance is how it connects to Krishna. Does that make sense? How it connects to Krishna. So that's what you have to be focusing on. Then things will adjust as needed. So if you have to adjust, you don't have to adjust. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because the point is you can say as well, we're uncomfortable, but the point is you do have to adjust anyway. Right? You go to the office. They have a standard of how you dress. So now if you pick an office that how they dress is how you like to dress, bingo. But, you know, if you can find a job like that, great. like that. You know, at least they have jobs like that in the movies. Like that, you know, like that. But in real life, I'm really not sure. You know what I'm saying? You know, you have to wear. Let's just like to say, you. Let just for example, let's say we want to be a chauffeur. Okay, what do we wear? There's a uniform.
Yes.
And that uniform probably hasn't changed in like 100 years. Like that. And the amazing thing is, even though it is archaic and it hasn't changed, you can still amazingly still drive a car. And it works. Right? And even the most liberal nonconformist person can identify you as a chauffeur. You know what I'm saying? And then you can say, well, no, but we drive a taxi. We're not restrained by all those. Could you wear a suit and drive a taxi? It means you could, but people think it's weird. So it's not liberal. Liberal, you have to dress in the particular way that a liberal says you dress. Oh, we don't get into all this formal stuff. It means you have to dress casually. If you wore a suit, everyone would think you're weird. So now if they're actually liberal, what would they care if the guy showed up in a suit at work? But it makes them uncomfortable because they don't want to wear a suit. Therefore, no one should wear a suit. Therefore, we can see is they're actually narrow, very narrow-minded, xenophobic people, the liberals. Not that they don't have good points, but it's not that their mentality is actually any better than a conservative. All it is different points that they support. That's all. Conservatives have good points they support, and there's a weakness in their mentality. Liberals have good points they support, there's a weakness in their mentality. You know what I'm saying? Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. Yes.
You often speak about Vedic culture as a best medium.
Yes.
But could you please explain what are the most important aspects of Vedic culture? Because it seems that it is not so important whether I wear kurta or chadar like that. What is the most important in Vedic culture?
If you're in clothes, it's clean.
Mm-hmm. And in general?
Cleanliness, respect of authority.
Yes.
Understanding one's position in society and acting and dressing accordingly. You know, according to your age, according to your position, according to that, then you fit in nicely. Having a proper work ethic, that you're not lazy or willing to do your duties. You know your duties, you're willing to do your duties. Like that. You have knowledge, right? You have sense control, so it's not just about you and what you want to do anytime you want. Does that make sense? And I mentioned respective authority, right?
Yes.
Like that. This is the whole point. So that's the whole point. That's what the Vedas give. So it is just it's a principle-based system, right? Yes. Totally. But now, the conditioned soul, what are some of their weaknesses? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Cheating.
Imperfect senses.
Imperfect senses.
Illusion.
Fourth one. Commit mistakes.
Yes. Okay. So, now, taking these principles. Now we have to apply them.
Yes.
Right? Because we have principles. Now, we have... In the beginning, then these principles were given by Krishna to Brahma. Brahma gave them to his sons. Right? Then that expands as the Prajapatis, and then Manu gives this to mankind. Okay? Now, these great personalities, Brahma, the Prajapatis, the great sages and all that, now they apply those principles in their life. And because they're beyond mistake, they don't have these four defects, what lifestyle do they live? You understand? That's the lifestyle we call Vedic. Because Vedic technically is these principles. But the religion, how you apply it, that's how these great personalities applied it in their life. And their discussions are documented as the Smriti. Therefore, the Puranas, the Mahabharata, all these literatures, how they describe religion is how they're practicing it. That's the basis of what we do. So it's based on Shruti, these principles. Mm-hmm. Then you have the Smriti, how these great personalities followed it, or what's known as, you know, excuse the term, tradition. Right? Then we have our acharyas from that wide range of tradition give what specifically will work for us in our environment. Right? Then we have our association and devotees and senior Vaishnavas that can help us understand that. Then we ourselves see how that applies in my life. That's how you apply it. Now if you say, oh, it's just a bunch of principles, so the ones in between don't matter. What the great personalities did and what Prabhupada and the Acharyas say doesn't matter. And I start with myself. And then with myself, then I see how I can add those Vedic principles into my life. Who would do that? A liberated soul? Conditioned soul. And what's going to be the problem? Cheating, mistakes, illusion, and imperfect senses. So you're going to end up with something not universal, not ideal. So the point is I come down through these first three, and I happen to be in this situation where I'm comfortable in my lifestyle I've been living for my whole life. Fine. But you know that it's in connection to the standards set by the other three. And so now what's going to happen? As I get purified, I will less and less identify with what I am. Does that make sense? You know, you see it going on now. People are from a particular country. People in that country, they identify with that. What happens if there's an individual from that country that goes and lives in another country? And they like it there, and they stay there for a long time. So they act exactly like people from their own country? No, they start to adjust. So it's going on today. People are doing that all over the world. You know, there's probably, I don't know how many. There's huge amounts of Americans that are all over the world, or British that are all over the world, or French. They're all over. And they're adjusting. So this thing is, no, we can't adjust, we can't do, we have to be, you know, just the way my mama used to cook it, that's the way I'm going to eat it. Now, okay, great. But understand is that that fits in the other way. You don't start there. If you're starting there, know that to be the lowest level of Krishna consciousness. That's like the bottom, that's down at the bottom of the barrel. You need binoculars to see it, you know, on Sakam Karma Yoga. It's right at the bottom. You know, it's that stuff that when you empty the barrel out, it doesn't come off, it's stuck to the bottom of the barrel. That's it. That's the philosophy. But starting with the first three and then accommodating, no, I'm here, I'm attached to that. Okay, great. Eat that food. Dress the way you want. Get out there and serve Krishna. It's not about making yourself comfortable and puffing yourself up. It's about, don't feel bad that I'm a wretch and I can't do anything. Then it's okay. I'm at this point. Just serve Krishna. That's the primary thing. And if you do that, then slowly, slowly you'll start to adjust. But if we puff ourselves up, no, it's fine. It's just as good as, what is this? That's just Indian. That's just this. That's just that. Then you're going to remain on the bottom of the barrel. And what do people think of that stuff on the bottom of the barrel? Right? They don't like it. It's really hard to get rid of. It's an annoyance. So that's the whole thing, is that even in accommodating one's attachments, you have to know how to approach it. If you approach it from the ascending process, from the modern academy, you will fail. You have to approach it from the descending. It comes down from Krishna. Like that. You have to see it that way. That's what our philosophy is. That's what we're being trained in. We're not worried what you're wearing and what you're eating. And people who think that's what makes Krishna consciousness also have made a mistake. At least they're pious enough, they accept authority and are willing to, you know, get into that kind of secondary arrangement. Right? Of the person who follows the rules and doesn't understand them, and the person who doesn't follow the rules because they don't understand them, of these two kinds of Niyamagrahar, they're both bogus. But of the two bogus, the person who follows the rules though they don't understand it at least is a little pious. And the person who rejects them because they don't, that's not pious. So there is even a hierarchy there. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that we don't care. But this is what the great personalities have done in their application of Krishna consciousness. This is what they prefer to do. So wouldn't we like to bring our life in line with what they do? That's why we choose the particular things that we do. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, if everybody's following the Vaishnav culture, I mean the Vedic culture, then in the Pancharatrik system, Vaishnav Chinna, that's one of the aspects in the Abhigamana, when you're approaching the temple. I get up in the morning, I take bath in that. So what after bath in that, then there's Vaishnav Chinna. I decorate myself in a way that identifies myself as a Vaishnav. You know, so that means the neck beads, the tilak. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? That, you could say, that's Vaishnav Chinna. But for us, because we're looking at it as the culture of those who are Vaishnavs, how they practiced it, we add into that the Brahmin thread, the dhoti, the chadar, the sari, you know, how we tie our hair, we do all these different things. Because for us, we're following those devotees doing that. But if someone can't follow that, very then whatever, they do what they can. But to say that Vaishnav Chinna is not useful, that's atheistic again. It's actually demoniac. You're opposing the preaching of Narad Muni. Because Narad Muni gives the Pancharatrik system, the Pancharatrik system gives Vaishnav Chinna. Right? If you can't accommodate in its wider, broader scope, how Prabhupada's given it, then fine. But if you oppose the essential point, then what's the point of initiation? Because all we're doing is saying the material world is a place of misery with our neck beads, and we follow the upward path to the lotus feet of the Lord. That's the tilak. And we reject those two, then you've rejected, and we don't use the name that identifies as servant of Krishna. That's the first three aspects of initiation. So what do we accept? Do we accept ourselves as servant of Krishna? It becomes quite doubtful. You know, it's there and to some degree, some sentiment. Just like the common man on the street, you can say he's Christian. But what does he follow that makes him Christian? Does he go to church? Does he say prayers before bed or before he eats? When does he think of Jesus other than when something goes wrong? You know what I'm saying? So then what makes him Christian? That's the whole point. So that's what we have to see, is that we're messing with more than just, you know, just we're messing with the philosophy. We're messing with fundamentals. But if one doesn't have the background and the culture, one won't know that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why then the fundamentals are the actual point. But now you have to apply those fundamentals as a secondary. What secondary do you choose? Do we make it up from our own mind, or do we follow what great personalities do? That's your choice. So, because Prabhupada gave us what the previous great personalities, what the Acharyas have done, what the ancients have done, we pick that. Those who reject that, saying it's not important, they're not standing on a very strong position, like being on a block of ice and the ice happens to be down in the tropics. You know, you're still afloat, but let's see for how long. You know, it's not solid because it's based simply on my conditioning, on my modes, and as those change, who knows what will happen. So we're saying that by practicing Krishna consciousness, the modes will change. Therefore, I'm having difficulty following what the ancients have done, but as I get purified, then it becomes easier. But if I've rejected what the ancients have done, therefore, when I get purified, now what am I going to do with my purity? There's a good chance I'm just going to get into philanthropy and all that kind of... I'm just going to dive right into pranamoy, since I've rejected manamoy. To reject varnashram means you reject manamoy. So I'm going to have pranamoy, I'm going to throw in a sprinkling of mukti, and sense gratification will be there, but no one will talk about it, because pranamoy means everybody's into sense gratification, I don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. Right? What is it? What's the saying? What a man does in the privacy of his own house, you know, it's no one else's business.
Gentleman.
Huh?
Gentleman.
What a gentleman.
So-called
yeah.
Gentleman.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that then there is no standard if we use that. But we're saying there is a Vedic standard in the fundaments, and there is a Vedic standard in the way it's applied. There is perfect fundaments, there's perfect example. And we bring ourselves as close as we can. Okay, we want to wear jeans. Have 7 pairs of jeans. Wash them every day. Then they're as clean as a dhoti. Technically, you should have 14 pairs of jeans, because you put one on in the morning, you go to work, and then you come back in the evening, you take those off, take a bath, put on a fresh pair. So that's standard. Sorry?
Standard 14 jeans.
Yeah, that's it. But anybody's going to follow it? No, because they're not following the fundament. So they can say, "Is no, but we're following the Vedic fundaments." But are they? Are they clean? Is it about cleanliness? Because it's about those points that I make. That's the first teachings. One is that you have to. Everything comes from Krishna. Krishna's entered into everything, and this is documented in the Shastra. Therefore, someone who accepts Shastra and follows according to Shastra, they're worth associating with. Right? It's the acceptance of the Shastra, not how good they are at it. It's the acceptance. If one doesn't accept the Shastra, they're not worth associating with. Then we talk about, now what are you supposed to gain from the Shastra? You're supposed to gain a respective authority. Gain knowledge, right, from the Vedic perspective. You're supposed to have that service attitude. You're supposed to understand your position. You're supposed to control your senses. You're supposed to have that mood of humility. Right? These kind of aspects, you have that. That's what's necessary. Then from that, then we get into rules. Now, brahmachari is this, then grihastha is that, vanaprastha, sannyasi, kshatriyas, vaishya, shudras. Right? That's next. But these first bit, that is what everything's founded on. That's the fundamentals. Does that make sense? Okay. Religion means abiding by the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's going to be both on all three levels, on Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Not that we just pick and choose. Right? So the philosophy will be there, and then the religion. So Saddharma, right, Sanatana Dharma means that's that philosophy that's practiced. It's a complete package. Religious principles begin from the time one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the Acharya's duty to spread a bona fide religious system and induce everyone to bow down before the Supreme Lord. One executes the religious principles by rendering devotional service, specifically the 9 items like hearing, chanting, and remembering. Unfortunately, when the Acharya disappears, rogues and non-devotees take advantage and immediately begin to introduce unauthorized principles in the name of so-called swamis, yogis, philanthropists, welfare workers, and so on. Right? So Prabhupada's even mentioning what are the forms it will take. That would be the opposition to the actual proper religious system established by the Acharya.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So in other words, so-called swami, yogis, you know, get into that kind of thing, philanthropists, they get into all those kind of things, welfare workers, so on, all these different, and so on. Means and whatever pranamoy has to offer.
Yes.
Yes.
In the Shravanam Kirtanam prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, we see that it's all about Bhagavat and Pancharatra.
Yes.
There isn't mentioned there as such, actually.
Because that's just like, you don't have to mention breathing. You know, what are you going to do today? Well, I'm going to
breathe.
You know, what do you call it? Breathe. You know, like that. You know. Does that make sense? That works for a talk show, but otherwise it doesn't. It's not necessary.
You know, the Greece story is just a side point in my mind. The yoga.
Yes. So. Go ahead.
No, it's not funny.
Oh, so it's just the you have the thing is that it's not because that's the system that goes on. Then in other words, the Vedic system is the total thing, so that you're following that as a human. Then from that you're taking the essence, which is Pancharatrik, and the essence of that is the Bhagavad. Yes. So the Vedic on that level you don't have to talk to, especially in the seventh canto, because we've already discussed it so much in the other cantos, like that. So now we're bringing out that focus on the Pancharatrik and Bhagavad. Because before that, we're just accepting that the Vedic should be followed. The Vedic should be followed in connection to Krishna on the, you know, on the Bhagavad Brahman level. So basically, the first six cantos are showing how, on the Brahman and Paramatma level, you see Krishna in everything. You connect everything to Krishna. But then, with the seventh canto, with Prahlad Maharaj, now we're starting to see introducing the Bhagavan aspect. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a problem. It means here we're seeing it come up.
Yes.
But it will be. In other words, it'll always be mentioned. But then it becomes the prominence. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that means that all the others is already established. So you don't have to mention it there, because it's just like you don't have to mention arithmetic when you're in algebra or in geometry. Mm-hmm. But it's based on that. That's the foundation of it. Mm-hmm. So is that right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yes.
My, As we change from Satyayuga to Kali Yuga,
right,
the Krishna conscious aspect gets lost.
Okay, you're including the other two in between.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are progressing.
Okay.
So that's why. Is it that because of that, Krishna also gives that accommodate that, like, no, from Satyayuga we see that along with the direct Bhagavat, all the Vedic. Pancharatrik, everything is included, and when we go to till Kali Yuga, that's why, like in Kali Yuga, the benefit is you can easily get that Asti Eko Mahanguna Kirtana Deva Krishnasya. The Bhagavad essence, because we don't.
No, the other ages they have qualification,
yeah.
Right? Because in the other three yugas, you're using your conditioning to serve the Lord through a particular secondary aspects, ritualistic aspects, that require great piety to do.
Yes, that also comes by Krishna consciousness.
No. That's the medium you're using.
But that medium, how we get that qualification for getting that medium?
Means in those ages they have them from one performs the devotional service, but also just from properly practicing. So they have piety, right? To be a yogi, you have to be able to sit and meditate straight for 60,000 years. That takes some focus. That takes you have to be very peaceful, right? You know what I'm saying? Nowadays is that you sit down and, you know, somebody sits down, okay? They sit down, oh, it's comfortable and all that. And once they've adjusted with the comfort, what's the next thing that happens?
What to do.
And then what do they do immediately?
They stand up.
Stand up or take a, or they pull out their phone.
And then they can sit for 60,000 years.
Yes, then they can sit for 60,000 years. So actually, yes, it's like great yogis, right? Like that. Just maybe, yeah, that's where we're missing the point. You know, so all these valley girls, actually, they're great yogis because they can do Facebook for 6 hours straight. Right? Yeah. So that's what's missing is not having the qualifications to perform those systems. So that means in Kali Yuga, it means in the other ages they had material and spiritual qualification. In Kali Yuga, there's no material qualification, so the only thing left is the soul, the spiritual qualification. Right? But at the same time, it is the essence. See, that's the difference between the Vedic system and the modern system. The Vedic system, the more qualified, you have the principles, and then you have the maximum amount of detail. Less qualified, you start cutting down on detail. The max principle always stays until you get back to the point where it's just principle. So the principles you're teaching to the kids. And then you build on that and so much detail. Does that make sense? Well, the modern is you start with the simplest detail and then build on that, and there's a good chance they never get the principle. Like that. You know, if you do post-graduation, you might bump into it. Might. No guarantee. Does that make sense? So it's completely backwards, the system. So as a system, it's not actually good for education. You know, you can say, oh, we could use the Vedic, we could use the modern. Is that the modern technically is not a system of education. It teaches you skill because it starts from the simplest detail and goes up to a more complex detail. But since you don't know the principles on which it functions, you're never independent. So that's why the Vedic culture is called Brahminical culture. It's meant for Brahmins.
Yes.
Well, the modern culture is meant for Shudras.
Yes.
Right? Because, let us say you go to school, you start from that little detail, you work up to very high detail. Okay, now you're very skilled in an area. Okay? Now you go out to get a job. You want to apply that knowledge. You go out to get a job. Okay? And you find a job. Now the guy that owns the company, does he know the skill you know? May not. Just like does the head of the company, the business concern, know computer programming? No. Unless the business is computer programmed, then he knows it. But otherwise, he doesn't know it. So here's a guy that doesn't have the same skill you use, and you're dependent upon him. He's independent. Why? Because he understands principles. He understands economic principles. Right? You have all those guys sitting in the office in the West Wing, but there's a guy who understands the principles of administration. You work under him. You understand? So like that, it's that those who understand the principles, they lead the society. Those who don't are on the bottom. So the modern system is designed to create Shudras. And then Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas happen just because that's the way they are anyway. You know what I'm saying? The MBA program is not for creating businessmen. It's for creating people who can liaison between the businessman and the Shudras. You understand? Businessman's already, he was a businessman when he was 6 years old. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the thing. So therefore we can't compare them as educational system. If we're talking about learning a skill, then we can say, yeah, they'll both approach the skill basically from simplest to most complex. But the difference is the Vedic will start with the principles, so you actually know what the detail you're working on. It's consistent, so you actually know it way better. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, we're going through these verses here. We've been on these two pages now for, this is the third day, right?
Yes.
Like that. You know, we haven't gotten hardly... What are we discussing? Are we discussing detail? Or are we discussing principle?
Principle.
Right, yeah. But if we're working on a modern system,
yes.
it would be based on the review questions, which is,
yes.
what is the specifics of knowledge? Mm. How many of this,
yes.
you know, what does this do? Right? And so we would have, in this much time, with this much, you know, hot air, we would have gotten through, you know, 10, 15 pages, if not more. So the point is if you don't understand the fundamentals, the principles of it, you won't be able to use the detail. Does that make sense? That's the difference in the Vedic Academy and the modern. So they're totally different schools. They're not like, oh, there's this or there's that. Oh, we could eat, you know, how you say French, or we could eat Italian. You know, they're just different. There's different foods. It's different systems altogether. They don't compare. Just like the descending, ascending. They're totally different systems. So the Vedic is descending. So it starts from the principle, then goes into detail. You start from the principle because that's the top, and then you come down into detail however far you can, down to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the ascending means you start with the individual and what detail they can get to, but who gets to the principle?
Mm-hmm.
Because since that's the top, how many people are at the top? How many PhDs? How many of those PhDs are actually, you know, really know their stuff? You know what I'm saying? Out of hundreds of thousands of millions of PhDs, how many are, you know, you actually even hear about? So that's the thing. It's different how it approaches. Because the beginning starts from the top, then you expand from there. When they understand that your communication, you have some feeling or thought, you want to express that to the other person. So to express it, you need a word. And what word you use, how the words are put together, that becomes a good medium for expressing what you want to say, but it's not what you want to say. It's the medium for what you want to say. Right? Now, if I start from that, won't it be easier for kids to approach grammar? What I just said now, has any teacher anywhere in your whole system of academic learning teaching you language ever said that? No. So that's why grammar just goes in one ear, out the other, unless you particularly, you have that, a nerdish mentality and you like grammar. Very rare. You know what I'm saying? But in the Vedic, when you start with the principle, there for people that have the brain that could get into grammar, that don't in the Western, would in the Vedic. Because the Vedic, it's not just math or not just, literature, it's the combination. The analytical brain and the emotional, the two function together. But the point is, you have to understand is the mathematics, the science is first, that's the primary. Then it's applied as art, that's the secondary. So how do I know the primary is there? Because it's the secondary. So that means your Vedic scientist is a very cultured, interactive person. Well, in the modern, they're socially dysfunctional. Yes.
So now here we see that the importance of the acharya.
Yes.
Can we say it is especially in Kali Yuga? Do we have acharya in other ages?
You'll always have the acharya, but the point is the sense, the religious aspect, the generic religious aspect is practiced by everybody. That's not the point. It's getting to the essence of seeing Krishna in it. That's the point that has to be brought out.
Yes.
So they'll focus on that.
Yes.
But in Kali Yuga, since you don't even have that,
yes,
therefore the Acharya establishes even the lifestyle. He has to establish the religion, like he says here.
Yes.
He has to establish the principles of religion, while they only have to establish the higher principles of religion, but it deals with the soul.
Yes.
But the Acharya has to deal with the soul and the conditioning.
Yes.
So in Kali Yuga, they have to do both. That's why in Kali Yuga, that's the only place where you see founder acharyas.
Yes, yes.
Right? So this term founder we use is not something that, someone started Food for Life. He's the founder of Food for Life. That kind of stuff shouldn't be allowed to happen.
Yes.
Founder is a sacrosanct term, which means that person who is like this.
Yes.
Whenever an acharya comes following the superior orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a representative, he establishes the principles of religion as enunciated in Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
Religion means abiding by the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about that he set up something and got it registered.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's not what we mean by founder.
Yes.
What we mean is founder acharya is something special. Therefore, you have Nimbarka, Vishnu Swami, Ramanuja, Madhva, and then in the fifth line, and Shankara. And so in the sixth school of Vedanta, then you have Srila Prabhupada.
Yes.
So Prabhupada, that's the level we're working at.
Yes.
So to just take it, he doesn't know what he's doing, or it doesn't matter, and stuff like that, that would be, you know what I'm saying? You have just like the Shris, they have a line that they just kind of do what they like. They don't do what the other Shris do. Have you ever heard of Ramanandis?
Mm.
Anyone's heard of Ramanandis?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ramanandis are an Upasampradaya of the Shris.
Mm-hmm.
They just do what they like.
Mm.
It's sentimental, don't get into rules, don't say, you know, they're just like North Indian babas. You know, we're babas. We're babas. Why do we have to follow all that South Indian, you know, rituals and stuff like that? Sound familiar?
Yes.
You know, that's all. So it's the same thing. So you always have it. You always have it. That. So the founder Acharya is a very unique position.
Mm-hmm.
The position of the fact hasn't really been appreciated.
Yes, yes.
Like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's becoming appreciated. Now there's an official, I think, paper on the founder Acharya
mm-hmm.
that wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. Means papers were there before, but being official was never is new.
Mm-hmm.
So that position, Prabhupada's position like that,
yes.
That's unique, and it's not just because Nityananda said this, that, it's a position. Then you know who it is by all these other evidences. Like that. But the position is something that stands on its own.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Prabhupada just explained it here. Mm-hmm. Whenever an Acharya comes, that means there's others.
Yes.
Right? And then you may have those that come in the line that support it, but they're not the one that is established. They just bring it back up to speed.
Yes.
Like Vadiraj came seven generations after Ramanuja to breathe life again into the system.
Yes. Yes.
You understand? So you get like that. They
yes.
come along, they establish.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So to take it that they make something new, that's a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense? Yes.
Founder Acharya, it's for us, Srila Prabhupada, or it should be accepted by everybody, like the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta
Saraswati? It depends. It's up to them or not, because the point is that if they just stick to the orders of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it'll work. But the point is it's like this. You follow the orders of the spiritual master, then you'll go back to Godhead. Okay? But how efficient you will be in spreading the mission, that's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the founder Acharya, he sets a system that can be used as a mission
mm-hmm.
that everybody can be involved in. Right? Now, the followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they're now preaching nicely in the West. How are they doing that? They're following Prabhupada's
yes.
system.
Yes.
If they didn't follow Prabhupada's system, they would not get anything. And I mean literally, they would not be one person. But because they follow it, they're getting many. That's founder Acharya. And the honest people in Gaudiya Mata understand this. Doesn't mean that they don't have their own mat, their own Acharya. Fine. That's great. But those who are honest understand the reason they're successful is because they're doing what Prabhupada gave. Because if they follow what they gave, they don't get zip anywhere. They don't even hardly do any good now because they don't follow the GBC. So at least when they use Prabhupada's preaching technique, they'll get something. But to be able to organize it into a mission, into a machine, that they won't be able to do unless they use what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave, which is what Prabhupada is using.
Yes.
So Prabhupada formalized what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had. The GBC holding together. Nobody else uses the GBC. They have GBC, but it's under their Acharya. We're the only ones that puts the GBC where the GBC is the group of, you know, Acharyas, you know, or preachers.
Yes.
Like that. That they're there, and that then the group is then superior to the individual. Well, they'll use it just as a managerial tool, which is better than most. Most just don't even have that. So it may. It's just reality. Is that what you're saying? But the point is that's in our line, you know, like that. The Shris, they still function in theirs. The Madhvas, like that. But each has their age. The Prabhupada is for the next 10,000 years. Basically, it means until when Kali Yuga is going to take its full effect. Like that. You know, if we think it's bad now, it'll be worse then. So best is don't stick around. Right? You know, heavenly planets, go to the moon planet, 10,000 years. Golden age, 10,000 years. Don't want to go to the heavenly planets because when you come back, golden age is over. And then at that time, then devotees are very popular because they're very tender.
good flesh.
Yeah. You know, so they bring a new meaning to Vaishnav achar. I don't know if they're up to the standard of the Maoris. You know, at that time, probably the Maoris would be, you know, the great, you know, empire, you know. Yes.
Maharaj, so Acharya comes, it's a rare thing. But then we see we have like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati.
Means there are the great personalities. You can call all of them Acharyas.
Yeah.
But then there's founder Acharya. So amongst the Acharyas, there's founder Acharya. So since we're in ISKCON, then we're dealing with the principle of Acharya, as Prabhupada mentioned, and founder Acharya. But with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and that, you're talking about Acharya. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is there, the mission's going nicely, then after he leaves, then it starts to go down. Then when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur brings it up, then it's all happening. Then when he leaves, it starts to go down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Prabhupada's giving that principle, is that then when the Acharya is there, things go nicely, and after he goes, then the sincere will stick with it, the other ones will try to adjust it and change it.
So it's quite natural.
It's natural?
Natural means it happens.
It happens, but it's not recommended, but it happens. Mm-hmm. So then, knowing that it will happen, therefore you take the steps to see that it won't happen. Mm-hmm. Not that, oh, it doesn't matter, because these things grow. You know, it's like Chanakya Pandit says, fire, debt, and disease. You deal with immediately, otherwise they grow and they create trouble. You know, so when elements that are against the Acharya's teachings come up, you have to deal with them immediately, otherwise they'll grow.
Yes.
Like that. You know, it's just like, what's his name? He started something, Charan Das Babaji. Mm. Like that. His thing was this, why do we have to be so strict? You know, it's just about chanting Hare Krishna, so it doesn't matter if the grihasthas don't follow the principles. They can eat fish. You know, we don't worry about it. Just main thing is they chant Hare Krishna. Right? And so then he pushed this like anything. Like that. I think it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur was opposing it very strongly. And then at the end of his life, then Charan Das Babaji saw that they missed the point that he was trying to make, was that stick to the principles. Mm-hmm. You know, chanting. All they did was saw is that we can call ourselves Gaudiya Vaishnavas and eat fish and do all kinds of nonsense. And so he understood what Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about. But he said it's too late, because now if he tells the disciples they shouldn't do that, they're already attached to that. So that's why these things, when they come up, they have to be nipped in the bud. Because you're dealing with conditioned souls, and the Acharyas know what that means. So you can't allow it to get out of hand, because it just sounds nice. Because then people get attached. That's why Vyasadeva had written Mahabharata. I'm not sure if he had published it, but he had written Mahabharata. But he wasn't satisfied. Then Narad Muni told him why. Because the approach he used in Mahabharata as the leading literature, then people will just see what they can do. They won't see the restrictions. Mm-hmm. And so then with time, you just start something that just breaks itself apart. So then he wrote Bhagavatam to establish very clearly and exactly about the devotional process. So one has to be very, very careful, because intellectually, you know, you're not going to get anyone intellectually smarter, technically, than Vyasadeva, or a better writer, or a better speaker, right? You know, so very qualified in that way, you know, like that. So if he could make this mistake, why couldn't anybody else? That's why it's so important to stick to the footsteps of the previous acharyas. Exactly where they put their foot, that's where we put ours. Yeah. Like that. Then you get there. So it's delicate. Therefore, the example that bulls are not allowed in China shops. You know, because the bull, he's just walking around. He's being natural. He's just doing his thing. You know, but the bull doesn't know what he's doing. He's strong.
Yes.
He's qualified. He's religious, pious. But he still doesn't know what he's doing. So that's why following the footsteps of the acharyas is so essential. So even we don't do a good job of it, at least we're trying. Rather than we rationalize and it's not important, we'll do something else. You know, so that's a problem. Because then one will say, well, it's just adjusting. Okay, we've had the four good little principles, we chant Hare Krishna. But everything else is not important. But then all those not important things, those are all described by the philosophy. Because the religion is simply the description of the religion. Right? In other words, why technically it works.
Yes.
So then if you leave out all that aspect of religion and just keep that the four regs in chanting, then technically you also leave out a lot of the philosophy. Like that. So it's not understood to us. No, we're going to keep the full philosophy and just keep this. That doesn't work. It all goes together. We're going to keep the baby, but you know, all these diapers, clothes, you know, formulas, all that. We're not keeping all that stuff. That's not important. You know, we're just down to the essence. You know, just they don't know what to talk about. Does it make sense? Is that yes.
It mentions that when the acharya disappears, they come in the form of so-called swamis, yogis, and welfare workers.
Yes.
It literally means those who are like just wanting to do good and they take the attention away from.
Yeah, just like this. Just like you go back that before it was how you say, ISKCON food relief, okay, and or let's say I mean, I can just say from the 70s, okay. They had the Sunday feast or a big festival, Janmashtami or that, there's tons of prasad left over. So then they put it in their, you know, those, you know, plastic buckets and that, you know, that the ghee came in and then stick it in the van and trundle down to some area of town that's not as fortunate as, you know, which, in other words, in those days was just around the corner from the temple. Because the temple is always in the worst neighborhood because it was cheap rent, right? And then they feed all the homeless people.
Yeah.
But the homeless people, you're giving them food. Who's giving the food to these homeless people? Huh?
Social.
No. But I'm just saying, who do those homeless people see giving them food?
Devotees.
They get them to chant Hare Krishna. They like that. So there's Hare Krishnas there. We're distributing prasad.
Mm-hmm.
That's spiritual. They know it's devotees. They know it's devotional service, whether they understand it or not or something, but they know it's devotional service. And they're accepting that and taking that. Then it came along as, oh, well, all the other religious things are doing, you know, welfare work. We're not doing, people ask why you're not doing welfare work instead of explaining the philosophy of what is real welfare work. Then they wimp out and, oh, well, yeah, no, well, yeah, you know, like this kind of jazz. And then they start doing this and it's presented just that we're doing welfare work. And the people that we give the food to, do they know they're devotees? No. So that's welfare workers.
And yogis?
Yeah.
How many yoga centers we have?
Yeah.
I've been to like, hey, come and speak of that. Okay, so what do we talk about? Well, don't say this, don't say that, don't say this, don't say that. Okay, then why do you invite me? You know? Go to India, get a guy with a long beard, that, you know, like that, and get him to come. Yeah, so it's very popular. I know people who use the yoga system. And you start off the asanas and they start talking and this and that. But after 2 hours, they're talking straight Krishna conscious, they're doing kirtan and everything like that. And they make lots of devotees. But the ones I'm talking about is that you know, it's been 6 weeks and they haven't even, there's been no, you know, mention of anything. And then others, oh, they worry, okay, we can't just do Hare Krishna, do some Ganesh Kirtan or Shiva Kirtan. Because naturally, every Western karmi knows Sanskrit and knows the philosophy and knows actually the difference between these mantras. Right? Of course, you know, like that. So this is yogis, philanthropists, welfare workers, and so on. Like that. So all it is they're conditioning comes up and they get They don't know because they're devotees and they want to do, but their conditioning starts to become too prominent. And then because it's successful material, then they become, yeah, oh, see, it's good, people are liking. Yeah, but they're liking the mundane. Everybody likes mundane. You know, you want to be popular, make a movie. You want to make some money, make a big movie, you know, like that. Then make $1 billion. You know, now that's some money. And like that. So that means what we're going to do, but what's the thing? Right? Some comic book? You understand? So that's the whole problem. Is that Prabhupada's thing is it's not about being popular, it's about being, you know, Krishna conscious. Mm-hmm. So he would give the example of selling a diamond or selling, you know, glass. Glass you can sell to anybody. Diamond, now that's the difficulty. So just like you say, well, you know, nowadays Christianity is so popular. How many real Christians are there that actually identify with it? How many it's important to them to please God, not that they shouldn't go to hell. There's a lot that are that God-fearing. He's a God-fearing Christian gentleman. But does he have love for God? Is he interested to please God? No, he just doesn't want to do anything wrong because he wants his material life to go nice. So you're going to get a few individuals here, a few monks here and there. So that means out of 2 billion or 2.6 billion, how many are actually, you could say, real Christians, how Jesus was talking about you should be? So how is it successful? Right? For all that work, then what's the point? You know what I'm saying? You want to please the Romans, but where are the Romans now? That's the whole thing. You want to please this modern culture, but in some time, this particular culture and this form will be gone. And that's where you'll be rooted. And then it will change and morph into something else. So it's not a strong position. Does that make sense? So that's why these things are pranamoy. So pranamoy sounds really good in the modern context. But since pranamoy is already included in devotional service, you just have to know how to explain devotional service that you may use pranamoy language. Mm-hmm. Pranamoy examples or... Mm-hmm. Let's say, being kind to others. Is that... Okay, now we would say that's a good pranamoyic position, right? Is that part of our philosophy?
Yeah.
Right? The Karunya Rasa. Lord Chaitanya,
yes.
The Mahavaranya avatar, is it part of our philosophy? So all we have to do is talk our philosophy, but say it in ways that they can catch it. We don't have to do their thing and then try to somehow or another shoehorn that into Krishna consciousness. That's the point of the descending. You use descending, it works. You start at the principle and you bring chumps down to the point where the person is. Just like if I am out of the well and I have a rope, how far down do I let the rope down?
Yeah,
it gets to the person. That's a preacher. If I bring it halfway and say, well, jump. That's not, you know, okay. If the guy does, if he's athletic, it works. But if not, then it's a problem. You know? And if I keep going, it's a waste. Now, if I'm in the well with the other person, say, I got a rope. You know, cool, wow, what can we do with this? Then, how's it going to work? That's the difficulty. So this is a very, very important aspect that's there. Very, very important. You know? So as we'll see, is that therefore those who are sincere, they try to see that what the acharya gives, that's what's being done. You know, to the best of their ability. Some may do it better, some worse. But to oppose what the acharya has given and just say we only accept this much of the acharyas, it's not a complete philosophy. Right? Just like in the Vedic system, only Purva Mimamsa and Uttari Mimamsa accept all verses of the Veda. Mm. Otherwise, Nyaya Vaisheshika, Gautama, I mean, Nyaya Vaisheshika, Shankya, and Patanjali, they don't accept all the verses. They just pick and choose what they like and leave everything else. But at least they don't rebel against it. They just don't deal with it. Does that make sense? So they're lesser philosophers. Does that make sense? So we already have... If you have the highest welfare, below that's already included. We have Krishna conscious, that's the highest. Prasad's already included. Like that. And so we'll go out there and take care of, as a concerted effort, we'll take care of homeless people. Are we supporting those who do full-time service? The community is supposed to give money for, how you say it? Food for Life, or, you know, what's it called now? You know, whatever it's, yeah, Food for Life, I think is what it's called. You know, like that. So devotees will collect for that, right? How many are collecting to take care of the temple devotees that are doing full-time service? And if you brought that up, it's kind of like, what are you coming to us for?
Devotional service is for free.
Yeah. Yeah, devotional service for free. So they should live off of air, because that's free. You understand? So this is not welfare workers, real. This is mundane welfare workers. If they were actually Brahminical welfare workers, then they would take care of anybody who's supposed to be. So that means the Brahmins, the cows, the old persons, the women, and the children.
Yes.
Who gives for all those? Who takes care of all those as a package? That's what the so it's already included. We're giving them Krishna consciousness on the platform of the soul, and in conditioning, we take care of these five. Those are the ones that need to be taken care of. We don't do that, but, you know, homeless guys, then we'll come down and do something. Mm-hmm. Understand? So we take care of the whole package, then that's what Arjuna is talking about, is that you have this whole package, and they also take care of poor people. So all that will stop. The women won't be protected, then the poor people won't be taken care of, nobody will be taken care of. Right, there'll be Shankara, so the kids aren't taken care of, like that, because nobody cares. Cows aren't taken care of, old people aren't taken care of, so the whole thing falls apart. That's his worry. And the Gita starts from, that's not actually spiritual. So just even on the material platform of welfare, what we just mentioned there about the taking care of the five and that, that's still not spiritual, that's Vedic. That makes the social system work. Now you connect that to Krishna, then fine. But Arjuna hadn't. He was just looking at it purely from the Vedic point of view. And that's rejected. So if Vedic is rejected on that platform by Krishna, why wouldn't Pranamoy? So when in the Vedas, you know, the Upanishads are rejecting the Vedic, certain Vedic aspects, that means that aspect without God consciousness. So let alone anything below that. That's the thing that's not seen. That's why we always start with the Vedic, we always start with a qualified person, an emperor, yes. A big king, yes. A big yes. Brahmin, and then we say that's not enough. Because otherwise, if we don't start up there, then we'll all think that, well, you know, I'm different. Yes, we'll find our little reasons.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yes.
I want to be clever. So, let's say I do some service for community of devotees, for temple, like this. I get some maintenance, but not enough for my basic needs. So can I think of the rest like the nation for the temple or the devotees, which is like lacking me?
I don't quite catch. What's the word for donation?
Let's say my basic need every month is 40,000 rupees.
Okay.
I'm getting 10,000 only for the
right.
service I'm doing.
Right.
So like I'm lacking every month 30,000 rupees.
So are you looking at it that 30,000 that you're acquiring, is that a donation to the temple, because
yes.
the temple should have been giving you that?
Yeah.
Is that your...
This is my question.
Interesting. Very interesting.
If it's proper or huh? not.
Yes.
Is it proper or not?
I would say you would be it would be very much appreciated in the economic community, this way of thinking. Yeah, because as long as you're thinking it's not mine, it's Krishna's.
Okay.
So in other words, the temple can. I need 40,000. The temple is able to get to raise 10, I raise the other 30.
Yes.
So it's actually a donation with the temple, but since you know, but it doesn't mean that in this you yourself aren't also taking it. It is a donation, but it's not that culturally you don't take care of others, give things to others and stuff like that. You should still be feeding Vaishnavs, giving gifts and, you know, in charity.
But
yeah.
That actually is like basic, so that should be above that.
Oh, that should be above that, yeah. So in other words...
So the donation is bigger then.
Yeah, so this, so you want to get at least to, you know, 50,000.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, because many devotees are facing this situation.
Tons of them are, because there's no understanding of all these. That's the problem, is we don't use the Vedic, but we don't understand how the modern works. The modern, they take care of their people.
Yes.
Like that. But in the Vedic, then we use, why would we use, oh no, but you have to work for free, it can't be paid. Like that, is that, what would be the motive behind that? Why would I say that as a manager or as a community devotee?
I'm greedy.
So I don't have to give money to the temple for that, and the temple doesn't have to give money for there. It's not actually the philosophy. It is. No, they should be just doing full-time service. You're taking care. So either it is you give them the money, and then... So it is either the temple then manages everything, so they have a place, they manage everything, they pay all the bills, they pay everything like that, and then they give them, you know, some cash for little things like that so that they don't have to take care. They just hand in the accounts, give the receipts, fine. Or it's that the temple doesn't have the infrastructure to take care of all that, so therefore we just give you all the money and you go and you pay their rent, you pay this, you pay, but it's on behalf of the temple.
Yes.
Whichever way works for them. Mm-hmm. But technically they should be arranging it all and just you just do your service. Because if you're paying all those things, that means you're not doing that service for the temple. But since someone has to do that service for the temple, then okay, you're doing it. Instead of one person doing it for everybody, every individual is doing it. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of how it's viewed, but it has to be viewed from the way for that purpose it has the culture. Because otherwise the rule without the culture then becomes very sterile. So that's the difficulty. When devotees try to apply the Vedic, it becomes generally very dry because they don't understand the culture of it, the art of it, the personal aspect of it. They just see generally only the economic and the managerial effect of it. So the artha and the aspects that should be there in artha and dharma, but they don't actually use artha and they don't really know dharma. They don't know that, and artha not so. But that kama and moksha are just totally left out. So even though they follow this sterilized Vedic system, but they also are following a sterilized Western system. So they don't even end up with any sense gratification. So you have this community of grihasthas with no sense gratification, which is really sad. Yes. Right?
Struggling.
Huh?
Struggling.
Yeah, they're just struggling. You know, they don't even have anything good to eat. You know, it's like, I'm not talking about because of money. They don't know how to make something good to eat. You know, the environment to eat it in, the association of the family, sitting down and eating together, and friends, and you know, that kind of thing. It's because it's all Maya. So that's the whole point, is you have this amazing, incompatible mix of not following the Western, not following the thing. So that's like Arjuna talks about the ribbon cloud. They're not getting either. And the fault goes to the Vedic, not to the modern. But it actually, the fault's just they don't know what they're doing. They're trying to follow that, but they don't know what the culture is. So therefore you get the problem. And the main problem will come when you cross the Atlantic. Because in Europe, there's culture and sense gratification. But those who went to America were puritanical. So therefore, sense gratification was a total no-no. So if you're into good food, good music, good dress, social things, technically you're not a bona fide American. Or you throw out the puritanical and you're a hedonist. These are your two options in the American mentality. Two settings.
Europeans know that Americans don't know how to enjoy.
They don't. Though they're the total enjoyers. You know, it's like in Europe, if you go to the movies, can you get a 1 liter cup of drink?
No.
But in America, that's standard, you know. You know, do you want the 1 liter or the half a liter? You know, it's not like, you know, do you want the, you know, 300 gram or the 200 gram? No, it's just, you want the, you know, and popcorn. How big is that? You know, it comes, it's a bucket. Literally, a bucket. You know what I'm saying? There's a grossness on that, but they don't enjoy. That's the sad part. So committed to sense gratification. And they're getting nothing. And so then you apply that into the Vedic culture, which perfectly engages all the senses in Krishna's service, all the fine points of the world, the highest forms of sense gratification and their origin you can trace back to India. It means all eating, sleeping, mating, defending, all back to India. So that's the thing, is here's the system where you get your sense gratification, you get your economics, you have your religious principles, right? You get freed from all that, and you get bhakti. It's like, bingo. Doesn't get better than that. But, you know, we're happy in our shoebox with our handful of warmed up gravel for breakfast. Sad. You know, but if you talk about the sense guy, you know, this is thinking, oh, so we can get guys. No, you talked about the devotional service. Oh, so then we throw all that out. No. It means that there's that. Oh, so we can then enjoy our. No. You have because you only have two settings. There is nothing in between. 100, 0. That's it.
So we need a constant guidance.
Yeah, that's the problem. We need something else. Otherwise, it's the problem. So that's why you start from the principles. Then you apply them how you can, even if it's a little rough and ready, at least you're on the principles, and then as you get purified and practice, then it will expand, and then it will become good.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Vrinda. Okay. Moving right through.
Yes, we finished the five
last night. We finished the
time. Yes. But now it seems that even inside this con, we can have the tendency to be so-called Swami, Yogi.
Yes. No, that's the thing. Because these are our conditionings.
Yes.
So that's what you say. It's not a problem that those conditionings are there. It's a problem, and we engage them. The problem is if we make them prominent.
Yes.
So in other words, someone is inclined towards welfare work, so get involved in distributing prasad and doing things like that. You know, serve prasad on the programs and do things and take the prasad out and do programs and find ways to distribute prasad. Great. But it's because the benefit of prasad and its devotees who are doing this. You know what I'm saying? Like let's say the church is doing a food program. Do people know that the church is doing it?
Yeah.
So then why is it a problem if they know we're doing it? You know? And they know the church, they wear their funny robes, and they're the head of the church wears a funny hat that's got a hole in the top, so what it's for, I don't know. You know, it doesn't keep your head warm. Like that. So then they're cool. Because people that wear robes distribute food. You know? Buddhists do it, you know? We do it. Everybody does it. So what's the problem?
An inferiority complex.
Inferiority complex. That's the whole point. Because they're not confident in themselves.
Yeah.
So that's why we have to be very careful. You can't. It says, well, I'm uncomfortable. Okay. But what's the reason we're uncomfortable? Because we have a certain identity that we have. We want to be cool. We want to be this. We want to be that. So the thing is okay, if it depends on that, then find within the system how it makes it works. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Wear your nice sari, and then wear your big black leather boots that are only laced up to the ankles. Fine. You know? So they see Hare Krishna, it's okay. They're cool. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is, you know, it's like you adjust... like that, because that's the whole thing. Is that you just find how what it, what's because then you know what the essence is, you know what the point is.
And to build that, I mean, to get rid of that complex, what do devotees need?
To be confident in the philosophy in Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
That's the thing. Okay.
I just had a question about regarding what Prabhu was asking about how grihasthas struggle. Is it that we need like to be more united? Like pranamo is supposed to be, I think, I'm not sure, like about you have a unity and work together to get
yes,
what you want.
Yes, but what's going to cause that pranamo? What's going to cause artha?
Dharma.
Yes, so dharma is going to create it. So unless there's rules governing what you do and why you do it and what's your position within the system, then it's not going to happen. So that's the whole point is we want, you know, you have the sitting, you're having your cake and eating it too. Here it's that we want to have the cake, but we don't want to cook. Not only that, we don't want to buy the ingredients. We don't even want to get the money to buy the ingredients. We just, it should be there because I'm a devotee. But the point is you want to have community, that means there has to be common values. There's common values. Common values are what? It means if you're talking about, what is the license with grihasthas that's not there in brahmacharis? Right? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So therefore, there has to be rules on what do you eat, how do you sleep, how do you mate, how do you defend. So there's common rules. They go to bed at this time, they get up this time. Not that you invite people over to your house for a party at 10 at night. You know, everybody goes home by 9 o'clock. So therefore, your party starts at, 5, 6, and 7. Depends what you want to do. You know what I'm saying? So like that, So does that make sense? So mating, what's the rules on that? Because the thing is dress has a lot to do with that. You know what I'm saying? So then how is that, what's the common ground? Because these are the things that if you bring up, this is immediately where you're going to polarize the community. Okay, we want to have community, therefore this is the dress standard. No, we can't follow. No, you can't regulate. Like, we're grihasthas, we're independent. Okay, what about food? No, forget it like that. What about, mating? No, what about defending? So then where's the community?
Yeah.
Zero. Therefore, I think like this, I eat, sleep, mate, defend like this, and I have a few friends that are like that, there's community. So, even though there's 5,000 devotees, your community is going to be three.
Yes.
And that's good, you're doing good. If you have three friends, you're doing good, means including yourself. Like that.
Okay.
Even if you have one, you're doing good.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. The modern system has been acknowledged like that. Even from the time when people was more, they were more committed to friends than all that. I think the statement about where some, quotable personality said if someone has one friend in a lifetime, he's actually doing really well. I think that's a quote from the 1800s. Back when friends and this and loyalty and all that kind of stuff was there. So nowadays, 10 people together, and at that, this one, that, if you put it all together, you might have one friend. Then you could say you're doing okay. So that's where the difficulty comes. So that's why the Vedic system starts off. What are the rules of human life? What is brahmacharya? What is grihastha? What is the lifestyle? And people who live that, there's community.
Exactly.
Right? Say what you want, there's community. So you can't want community and oppose all the things that create community. Just like, okay, now let us say in the West, on at least a particular platform, would we say Indians have community?
Yeah.
Okay, how much do the temple devotees necessarily like the Indian, or the Westerners in the community like the Indians as a community? Not at all.
Not so.
Why? Because they have community. That's why they don't like them. They'll say it's this, that. They just come in. They just do that. They don't notice everybody else. That's only because there's tons of them,
Yeah.
One family comes in. Their kids are yelling and screaming, running around because there's only one or two of them. Then you don't mind so much. You bring in, 100 of them. Then you say, oh, the Indians, But their kids are better behaved than the Westerners.
Yes.
You know? So it's just they have values of community. Now, let us take like this. Could now, let us say you're going to some areas, okay, you know, just take like this, since we're taking, you know, outside of here, that part. Okay, let us say you have, would you say in America that you might have a bit of community amongst the Hispanics? Okay. Okay, now, what about, is there as much problem between Hispanics and community and Indian community as there is between the, you know, how you say, kind of general American community and the Indian community, or is it more similar?
More similar.
Why? Because they have community.
Yes.
They eat the same food, they have the same values, they want the same things for the kids, they deal with their wives the same way, their children the same way, their husbands the same way.
Yeah, the values.
You understand? While the West, the so-called Western, it's each individual is an island.
Yeah.
And they definitely want to maintain their, what do you call it, sovereignty. You know, they don't want anybody poking their nose. So they want community, but they don't want to pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's the thing, is you want community, means you pay. It's just, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the whole point, is that...
it's a work.
It's work. Mm-hmm. Means people know who you are, know what you do, and all this. They want their urban, you know, nobody knows anything, I'm completely independent, but we have this great community.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
Yeah.
You understand? So it's opposing points.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Someone has to accept both.
Yeah, it means you have to accept those. So that's the thing, the Veda can balance these things. Because Dharma establishes what everyone does, you automatically therefore have community. Because you have community and Dharma, everything's working together nicely, therefore you have Artha. So the whole point of the Pranamoy is to come together to get Artha, but it's already accomplished automatically with Dharma. The other one, you have to work at it and give the philosophy for it and all that to keep it up. But Dharma, you simply have to discuss the philosophy of Dharma. Artha comes anyway. You understand? And because there's Artha, then there is sense gratification. So in the West, technically, there isn't that much money. That's why there is no sense gratification.
Yes.
You know? But it's like, let's say you go into the, you know, the simplest village, right? And let us say there's, you know, a wedding or an anniversary or a birthday party or, you know, something. Relatives came from out of town.
Mm.
What's the scene on food? Is it, like, restricted?
No.
'Cause they pull out everything. You know, everything that's been laying around and this, and they get it all out. It's all happening. And even you're not part of the family. You're just walking down the street. Hey, come down here.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Like that. But here's, and this is a direct incident told to me by a kid. You know, his friends are at his house. It's time for a meal. The mother comes to the son, tells him, "Tell your friends to go home now. It's time for lunch." You understand?
Western one.
That is there. Now, if this was in Asian, African, possibly even European, South American, Central American, or Oriental house, and all your friends were there, and it was time for a meal, who would be eating?
Everyone.
Everyone.
Yes.
All your friends.
Yeah.
Someone needs.
Yeah, so then if you don't know the friends, you just go to your son and say, tell your friends it's time for lunch, they should all come.
Yes.
You know, in other words, they're all playing around the house and you don't know them, so you don't, you know, know how to interact. Once you get to know them, then you'll call them all, but you know.
It's the opposite. If they don't want to eat, then the family feels like...
Yeah, so you're trying to get them to eat, but it's known. I remember another devotee telling me that as a kid, you know, from Italian background, is that... There would be, you know, the whole scene there, and there's all the houses there. So everybody was friends. The kids always are in a group. They play all together. So wherever they happen to be that day, that's where they eat.
Yes.
So if they're all in, you know, house A, that's where they eat. If they're in house B, they eat there. It's not that nobody's calling them or that. They're all over at their house. They'll feed them. When they're at your house, you feed them.
Yeah.
You know? So that would be one house, and there'd be 8 to 10 kids.
Yes.
Like that. And it's not like they're a problem or a trouble. You're happy that they're there. You know, it's not that they'll be a little bit and they'll run out. There'll be tons.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah, like in South America, they have this understanding. If you like, you're not able to give food to others, means the food will stop for you. Like you want, it's like a dharmic.
Yeah, because the point is that you get what you give. Yeah. You know, like that. What you give away is what you'll have. Yeah, so it's just standard. So these are, but what is that? That's dharma, actually. It's not connected to the Veda. But that's my point, is what we're talking about here, it's easier to teach anyone from most all points of the world. So the old, it means the older the culture, the easier it is to teach. Right? You know what I'm saying? So most all places of the world, this stuff will be easy. Just it may take a little time to get it, to work it out like that, because it won't necessarily have the sophistication. But then you have the first world, they have the sophistication, but they don't necessarily have the karma.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like that. And so then, but if they accept it, then it will go. So if there's a tradition, like if they're first world, but they're old school, which is getting less and less now, then it will also be easy for them to understand.
Yes.
But if they're not, if they're first world and new school, then practically speaking, you have hardly any chance of getting them to appreciate and understand the Vedic. You could explain it and it'll sound great, but when it goes to applying, there's too little samskar there. So by chanting and all that, it will come up, and then when it comes up, then you apply it. You know what I'm saying? So in the beginning, you don't expect it. You do what you can. In other words, those who do know, arrange it, because that's the best part, is the first world guys don't mind someone else arranging it. Because that's generally their method. Go to somewhere else in the world where they do have some culture and let them arrange everything, and you sit back on the top of the pile. Right? You know what I'm saying? So they don't mind. So then those who are, then they take the lead. But the problem is then when you introduce the thing, is this, no, everybody's equal, so therefore someone who doesn't have cultural understanding, they become the lead in the social scene. Like, you know what I'm saying? So then you have a problem. So who's on, let's say we have a community council. Mm-hmm. Who's on the council? Right? There may be one or two that like to do some good for the community, you know, but you're going to have a lot there that they feel that they have been they've gotten the bad end of the deal from community, whether it's as a devotee or not. They want to be there to make sure that they don't get in trouble. So most of your committee there is people who don't know community but want to make sure that it doesn't happen to them.
Yes.
And then someone who is a leader and knows community, they're going to oppose them because the whole problem is this authority that creates my trouble. Mm-hmm. So then someone who could establish community can't.
Yes.
You know, there's one or two, sounds like a great idea. What do you mean? Oh, this is that, you know, back in, you know, you say 83, this happened and all that, but this is 2016. No, but you know, it's the principle. Okay, cool. You're not going to get anywhere. So all it is a forum to vent the feelings that you have, your dissatisfaction or frustration that there isn't community. But, you know, in venting it, you don't allow it to happen. You know what I'm saying? And all these examples I've given up now are real life, real time. Like that. We don't.
Krishna's not the center of any of that.
No, that's the whole point. Krishna's not the center. Our own attachments, our own identity is. That's why it doesn't work. So it's not that someone has had a bad time and they want to make sure no one else does. You have that kind of person also. Now that kind of person, let's say doing well for work is glorified. They came from a poor background. They want to make sure no one else has that. They didn't have the opportunities. They want to make sure everybody else has that. But you have those who, you know, that follow the Mershon frog principle, that they didn't have it. Nobody's going to have it. You know, then you get nowhere. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that the principles that the Vedic culture talk about in culture, the religious principles for most cultures of the world, 50-60%, even 70, 70, 80, like this, are similar. Slight different way of applying or this or that, but the principle is there, the feeling is there. So if you can just show the translation and what its connection is, then it could work quite well. But you have to be constant on it so that they start to think in the Vedic way rather than always thinking whatever is their background. And that's with people who have the culture.
Yes.
How many do that? You know what I'm saying?
And this senior disciples are modeling the Vedic culture. That means that new people coming through are never, it's going to be take such a long time for them to be aware. They're not going to be aware.
No.
So then they can't accept if they're not aware.
Yes.
And so as they're studying and learning and chanting and mixing with the devotees and disciples, it's going to be more difficult for them.
Yes, it is.
To embody the culture.
Yes. That, not that they wouldn't want to, just that there's no example, so they don't know what to have to do. So that's going to be the advantage as time goes with the generations, that you have the generations that they're following. Then, because there's always going to be first generation, because we're preaching, so we're always expanding. So then the first generation comes in, sees others are following that, 2, 3, 4 years of practice, they're able to do it. Because for 3 to 4 years, everybody tries to, you know, do all the Krishna conscious things. But if no one else is really doing much of the Vedic stuff, then, you know, basically all you did was adjust with chanting and the four regulative principles. Because nothing else was available.
And no one's there to teach you.
No one's there to teach you, no one's there to show you. Does that make sense? So,
or someone tried to teach you what is not.
Sorry?
Someone tried to teach you like their understanding of something instead of like someone that doesn't understand the Vedic tried to teach you that, so you're going to have actually more trouble.
Yes, then you can have trouble also. So that's why if they're starting with the principle, even if they get the detail off, at least you have the principle right.
Yes.
So that's what you saw in the 70s, early 80s, is that devotees, or 60s, is that devotees had the principle, but the form that they showed through it, some did it very nicely, some didn't. But at least you caught the principle of it. So you were rough and ready, but you were devotional rough and ready.
And Prabhupada was there, the example.
Yes, and so then you had that. So all it is with time you get purified, get refined, then you're able to learn how to add the details so it is correct.
Mm. Yes. The difficult part would be when someone tried to teach you the detail without telling you what is the principle about.
Yes.
And right there you get an issue that's pretty much the issue I got with authority all the time.
Yes.
Teaching me details and I don't get the idea. If I don't get the idea, I'm like, but tell me why. And
But they don't know why. So then don't expect that from them. In other words, what can they lead in? So if they can manage, they can hold the things together, or they can do, you know, class, or they can do kirtan, or they can, you know, so what area they lead in, accept them as a leader in that and authority in that. Don't ask them these other things. Ask those others who can answer the question.
That is the authority that is available at that moment.
That's there. But therefore, talk to others. Look on the internet. There's lots of stuff around.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Smart.
You know, it's just like, what's it called? Chopati, I think, has a website.
Yes, Desire Tree.
Desire Tree. Okay. So those that they feel, you know, really nice, so there's lots of preachers there, and lots, so they have lots of stuff there. So you go to these places, or, you know, find forums, find association, because like we said, it only takes one. You only have to find, you know. You know, it's nice to work in a community that everybody's doing, but one's enough. You know, and then you expand from there. Okay? Yeah, because if you explain it, then it's actually able to deal. Because, so it's strong. Because the Vedic deals with all of it. The Vedic is, all the issues that are there, it's actually taken care of in the Vedic if it's understood. And the individuals within it come out much more powerful in that than they do in the modern system where they're so-called being empowered. You know? Like that. Is that something? Yeah. Okay. Thank you
very much.